Why do you say that, Father? You aren't afraid, are you?
No. But I respect some of the superstitions of others. Often they are founded in fact.
Broadcasting live from our Sanctum Sanctorum in Venice, California, this is the Sixth Sense Society. I'm your host, Krista, here with our producer, Michael, and today we're doing our own show. We're calling it Charging for Readings. We mean readings like astrology readings, tarot readings, all those different kinds of readings, but what is the value? Before we get started on this interesting and important topic, we think anyway, Michael has a few announcements.
Hey everybody, welcome back to our show. I'm really glad you guys can make it again. A special shout out to Mac, who's become one of our regular fans, and we're happy to see him always on the chat. We have all kinds of great stuff coming up. Next week, we have Dan Moore coming back. He's the Kabbalistic Hermetic philosopher. He'll be talking about the esoteric lovers in the tarot, and that should be really fun. And then, so lots of tarot stuff this month. And then the final guest this month will be the gals from Haunted History BC, who've just put out a new journal and magazine, and so we'll be talking about that with them, and they're always a lot of fun, too. And all kinds of great stuff coming up. And don't forget, 25th of July, our two-hour special on all things UFO and extraterrestrial with all kinds of great guests. And so please join us for that as well. And that's going to be, as I said, on the 25th of July. Get all the information on our website, sixthsensesociety.com, S-A-X-T-H, all spelled out. While you're there, if you can afford to, buy us a coffee on Ko-Fi. It helps us a little bit cover some of the cost of renting space to do the show and all that good stuff. But we're just happy to do it. We have a lot of fun with you guys. We have a lot of fun meeting our guests and so forth. So it's a wonderful experience for both of us. And then, you know, you can sign up for our newsletter there and all kinds of other stuff like that. And I don't want to take up too much more time because, and of course, click like and subscribe on YouTube. That's one of the best things you can do for us. That really helps. So I'm not going to take up any more time now. Let's just jump into the topic. So take it away, Krista.
Great. I do have one important and very exciting announcement. We have volume 5 of The Feminine Macabre here. Congratulations to Amanda Woma for putting together another amazing journal. This is the 5th one, like I said, and there's like over 30, I think there's like 37 articles from women and non-binary writers, and my own article is going to be in this one, Predicting Death. But honestly, I just want to support this journal because it's one of the few journals that really supports women in the paranormal and metaphysics, and there's not a whole lot of places yet, and they're becoming more, I think, prevalent that do that. Plus, honestly, they're really great articles. I read it before I submitted to it, and the first volume, and I loved it. I read it cover to cover, and I've read it every single time. So I really encourage you to pick up the current volume or the past volumes or all of it at spookeats.com and also available on Amazon. So yes, let's get started. This topic was one I've been wanting to talk about for a little while for a variety of reasons. And rather than just talk about the idea of what to charge or what to pay for readings, I thought it would be better to talk about the value associated with readings so we can talk about different aspects besides the money. But I thought the first thing we would talk about, just to get it going, is whether or not one should even charge for readings. And there are people that don't believe ever in charging for readings, and it goes against their own spiritual beliefs and principles. And I say, if that is your belief, good for you, because honestly, you should live your life according to your values. However, I don't think it means that people cannot charge. Another extreme view related to not paying for readings, I came across someone that just believes everyone is a fraud who does this because they, again, their belief system is that these things don't work, and it doesn't matter that they haven't really explored it. So you have those like extreme skepticals that would refuse to pay, and they think you're a fraud. fraud if you charge. And there's all that in between, of course, that we're going to be talking about as well. But I just wanted to put out that I pay for readings. I've paid for them when I've been actually not very wealthy. I mean, almost broke. And they have definitely helped me. And we're going to talk about sort of how they will later on in the show. But Michael, first, did you want to comment on whether or not you think people should even charge for readings?
Sure. I always tell people I'll stop charging for readings when my landlord stops charging me rent, because we definitely have to pay our bills, too. And I think that one of the advantages of charging for readings is the fact that we can do it full time, which meant that we have more time to invest into the tarot and into learning our craft, which has been a real benefit. So I think that that's fair. I do think, however, at the same time, that it should never be about the money. So for me, if I'm going to do a reading, whether I'm getting paid a lot, whether I'm not getting paid a lot, whether I'm doing it for free, shouldn't change the quality of the experience or the reading I'm doing for the person. For me, it's about first and foremost wanting to help that individual, and that's where their heart has to be. And so I think you have to have a purity of intent and a purity of motive when you do readings, and it's not just to kind of make money. Money should be almost a second thought. And then you can get into what's a fair and reasonable amount to charge. I'm sure we'll talk about that as we delve into the topic. But to me, again, I think that it's really about what your intent is, where your heart is. And as I said, is it about the money? And you know, the idea that, again, that money can corrupt, in the sense that what if I have to tell a good client something they may not want to hear? Am I going to allow that to alter the reading or alter my ability to be objective? And I know with Kristen and I, we've never done that we've always tried to maintain a purity of what we do. And then in some situations, again, you know, maybe it's a situation where even if the person can really afford the reading, we just don't feel right about it. Something's happened that is of such a nature, you know, somebody, let's say that they got a reading because they'd been sexually assaulted. I would feel that if I charge that person, in some way I'm benefiting from that act of violence against that person, and it just might not feel right to me to charge. So there's many cases where Chris and I have said, you know, let's not. And I remember this woman at the Bodhi Tree when we used to read there in Melrose when it was open. We were there for many years. And she came in and she said, I'm going to get a reading today, but I can't really afford it. But I want this to be an act of faith. You know, I believe that better things can happen. I can manifest something better. And so even though I can't afford it, I really want to do it because I really want this to be a statement of faith, you know, and belief. And I said, great, sit down. We did the reading and she got a lot out of it. It was very helpful. So afterwards, she went to pay and I said, you don't owe me anything. She said, no, but I wanted to pay because I wanted it to be my act of faith. And I said, but it was because you were prepared to pay. And I said, now I know that you're struggling financially and I'm not going to take your money because that would just make it worse. And I'm not going to make your suffering worse. But at the same time, you know, you were prepared to do it. So you have made that statement of faith, but I'm just not going to take your money because I knew she really truly couldn't afford it. And she was honest about that. And I just felt it wasn't right. So for me, it's about, you know, again, can you make the money not matter? And that's really what it's about in the reading. But if that's all that matters, then I think it's a problem.
I agree with that. Now, the one thing I did want to sort of talk about is how it's changed in terms of charging since we actually began in the late 90s. In the late 90s, astrology readings were definitely happening, but I would say they were pretty affordable. And at that point, like they seemed to be maybe the more popular known readings. And so card readings, of course, had been around for a long time. And then probably psychic readings. And they were all extremely reasonable. I remember going to psychics for, you know, $30 for an hour and a half and reputable ones. So since that time in the 90s, now obviously that went more longer or further, I would say $30, but I could afford them pretty easily. And so since that time, readings in general have really skyrocketed. Astrology has become maybe, I don't know, it's just everywhere, you know, and it's become written about in Vanity Fair, and even tarot also took off in terms of interest, largely, I think, due, I'm going to say, to social media and people being able to set themselves up on social media. And so it's really changed to me this ground of charging. And I think it's an important topic because I have seen some really unbelievable high charges, and it's flabbergasting to me. But I guess you could say it's market value. Why not charge that much if you can? So, for instance, just for the heck of it, I hadn't looked for a long time at some of these psychic networks where I'll tell you my story about applying to one a long time ago in a minute. I just wanted to see maybe three popular and what were the ranges that the readers of all kinds charged, ranging from astrologers to psychics to mediums. And granted, they only get a cut of what this is. Having said that, in three sites, I looked at California Psychics, Purple Garden, and Keen. Two of them I know are very well known. The cost ranged from $1 a minute to $15 a minute on both California Psychics and Keen. And then on Purple Garden, it ranged from $1.99 a minute to $17.99 a minute, which, by the way, an hour would be $119.40 to up to $1,079.40 for an hour of a reading. And I mean, that kind of blew me away. And by the way, it looks like people are getting readings with these. Some of them are very popular, the top readers. And again, remember, these networks often take a huge chunk of the money. And that is one reason why, if you go to Psychic Network, it is more expensive. So for instance, when I applied to, I believe it was California Psychics, it was a long time ago, it was 10 years or more. And I got in, and then when I saw what they were going to give me, it was something like, I don't know the exact, but it was something like they'd take about 80% of what I made. I kid you not, it was high. It was the highest I have ever seen. I realized it would be like, you know, I could make more money working at McDonald's probably eventually if I got into the management, and I just couldn't do it. I said, that's just way too much of a cut. And remember, you know, they don't have the same overhead as a store does, where they pay the rent and things. So one of the things when you go to yourself as a reader, when you decide you want to charge, you do have to take a couple of factors. Are you going to be doing it at home only? Are you going to be working in a store where they're going to take a cut? Will you work for a psychic hotline, which probably for some people is fine. But for me, at that level, I'd been working for, I don't know, by then, 15 years or so as a reader, it would be hardly any money. And it just didn't make sense to me. And again, there might be some out there that you know, are reasonable to work with, because there's definitely a lot more networks. But it's really changed a lot. And I personally think it's getting a little bit out of control with some of the charges. I personally would not pay anyone $500 an hour, no matter how good they were, for any kind of reading, or even $300 an hour. I don't think I would. So one way you can sort of decide if you want to charge yourself, you can ask yourself, would I pay that amount to anyone? So that's one point I wanted to make.
Yeah, I remember Silver Ravenwolf, who's a well-known sort of witchcraft practitioner. He's written a lot of books. Sometimes, you know, a little cheesy covers, some people think, but I thought a lot of her material was good. And she said that you should charge for a reading the equivalent of a good haircut. Now, I don't know any good haircut that I would pay $1,000 for, you know, at the end of the day. So I think that that's just, excessive. But, you know, again, if you look at therapy, typical average therapy, $100 to $200 an hour is not that unreasonable for a therapy session these days. So I think something in that range is probably, you know, for me, it's a comfortable range to be in. That's about where Krista and I are. We're about $125 an hour. And so again, and obviously some people do, you know, shorter readings, half an hour or whatever. In fact, most of them. But we average out to about $125 an hour. We do a little bit more for parties because it's a little bit more exhausting to do 16 readings in a row with no break in between. So we do charge a bit more for special events usually, and then travel time and stuff like that, because we have to go to them, whereas, you know, private readings, they tend to come to us. But again, we still try and keep it within what we think is very reasonable. And at the same time, not shortchanging ourselves, because it is what we do. And we've put a lot of time, a lot of years, a lot of hours into developing our craft. It's been, you know, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that has gone into becoming who we are. So I think that we do deserve to be reasonably compensated. But for me, you know, again, $125 an hour is not half bad pay.
No, I totally agree. And it is something you have to kind of wrestle with, in terms of what you think your own value is. And that's one thing maybe in the beginning I had a little bit of trouble figuring out. And I would maybe, you know, I would do, for instance, bartering when I did not really want to barter with the person, but I felt, oh, I should do that. I should be open to that. I would give people discounted readings because I absolutely believed everything they said before doing the reading, even, that they were really broke. And I found out the worst situation with that I found was when someone booked a party with me, and I had just moved to LA maybe a year or so, and they lived in the Hollywood Hills. Well, now if I'd known that, I would have thought, well, they obviously have money, they just don't want to pay. And so I remember shortchanging the amount for the party. And as Michael said, parties are, for us, we work really hard at parties. We don't take breaks hardly. We don't stop sometimes for 4 hours. So anyway, I felt so, I want to help her out, you know, and I get there and they have this amazing catered event. And there was one other like person doing something like, I don't know, it was balloons or henna tattoos. She had a really nice home. And that's when I learned, okay, you know, I can't believe what people just tell me on the phone. And she seemed very believable, to tell you the truth. And so I also personally draw the line at certain things. Like I might still, like Michael said, I have given people a free reading because I just felt like I wanted to because of who they were, to help them out because of something they're going through, but not parties. I sort of draw the line there. I'm sorry, friends, even if you want to book me for a party, you're going to have to pay because it's very hard work for me. And I that's one way we can kind of make a little money. Whereas, you know, because we're reasonably charging, we're not going to become really rich doing readings. There was one other one I found. I'm not going to say the name of this person because I don't want to sort of come after people individually. But there was someone who is a medium that's somewhat well known. And on her site, she charges for a virtual 2-hour small group readings with up to 8 people, $625 per person. That is $625 per person with up to 8 people, which means that the person could make up to $5,000 for a virtual event. And I don't know, it really just struck me as wrong. And so I get it when people say, well, what's wrong if people can afford that? And it reflects on the industry in the sense that, you know, when you think of like fashion or, you know, maybe furniture, it's okay to have these really high-end things that people buy. Even then, they should have some quality in it that sets them apart. And you could say, well, maybe she is setting herself apart, you know. Well, maybe yes and maybe no, because I have met very humble readers that are amazing at reading. So reading is not the same as an object where you can say, well, this is like, there's only 10 copies of this particular limited edition book and I want that. That's perfectly fine. You know, you can cater to the very wealthy that way. And I have no problems with that, you know. But there's something about anything that involves serving others, whether it's through medicine or things that when it gets a little just so outrageously different from sort of the middle ground, then I feel like Michael said, maybe they're only thinking of the money.
Yeah. And I think that, again, you know, it's for me, it's just a case by case basis. And it's what feels reasonable and fair and just in any particular reading or situation. And that to me is kind of what we go by. And I think that there has to be some balance. I also think that it comes down to personal philosophy somewhat, too. And Krista and I basically just never really wanted to be readers that were exclusive to only those that could absolutely afford us. You know, we like to work with all kinds of different people. So I think that if we charge too much, like, you know, again, thousands of dollars an hour, it would bar us from that kind of diversity of clientele that to me has been such a rich part of our own personal growth. And I think that it would be a shame to kind of be that level of exclusive. But again, you know, like I said, I got to pay the rent. I got to pay my own bills too. And it's not going to do anybody any good if I'm in a cardboard box under a freeway trying to figure out how to survive, because I'm not going to be doing readings for anyone at that point. So for me, again, and I also think that these extremes, I must always charge, I can never charge. Again, I'm a believer in moderation, you know, that, you know, I can charge, I don't have to. It's maybe a better way of putting it, you know, but I don't like these extremes of I can or I can never and all that must stuff. And to me, it's just not the middle path, and I'm a very middle path oriented kind of person.
Yeah, I totally agree. The sort of middle path and also the facing the reality, like, especially if you live in a city like we do, perhaps if I lived in the Midwest, I might even come down on my rates, to tell you the truth, because it's, again, our overhead is way higher than certain people. And I do think that, at least from my point of view, that's how I would sort of factor in what is my overhead. How often can I read? Because we have found personally, we cannot read 40 hours a week. It's just exhausting beyond belief. And we did in the beginning, we would read pretty much every day and we'd come home on the weekends and we were in our early mid 30s and quite healthy. We couldn't move for 2 days. It was crazy how tired we were. And so we realized we can't completely, you know, we have to have time away from readings as well. So that has to be factored in. And then over the years, we've had to go up, certainly, though we don't go up as often as maybe we should have. But you know, again, it was more like, well, we need to because our rents have been going up every year. So we have to catch up with what Michael said so we can pay the landlord. So those are just some of the factors. And as Michael said, it's more a case-to-case basis. The other thing that we did in the beginning in terms of a pro bono work, which I really enjoyed doing, is we used to do charity events we believed in. So when the Venice Clinic had to raise money before Obamacare, they don't have to anymore, they had this big event and they would ask us to come and do readings for free. And I don't even know if we got tips. If we did, I don't remember. And it was a long event and we did to help raise the money. And that always felt really good, is doing something like a charity event. And as Michael said, it's also about when you read professionally like we do, you get a lot of experience with different kinds of people. And working at an event like that, it also helps you to get little quick readings, get good at the quick readings because you have to, really. But that's something I'm really proud that we did. I really enjoyed it and look forward to it. We did it for, I don't know how many years, but quite a few years, and I looked forward to it.
Yeah, another thing when it comes down to charging, and this is another, you know, getting away from what we've been discussing a little bit, is the idea that I've run into some people that as readers, if a person comes to me that's never had a reading before, never had a reading with me before, and they want to sit down and chat about what we do and get to know us and all that stuff, I've known a few readers that actually will not do that unless they pay them. And I think that's a little ridiculous too, right? I mean, I think you have a right to get to know the person that you're going to do the reading for. And I don't see that that's something I should be charging for, is for sitting there and explaining my process to someone so they can decide if it's right for them or not. And again, it might not be that I'm good or bad. It just might be not what they're looking for or something like that. But for me, again, you know, if that reader won't take the time to sit down and engage you and talk to you and explain their process to you and answer your questions and not charge you for that, I mean, that's kind of a little bit ridiculous too.
Yeah, that people that want every minute to count financially. And that could be also a sign of insecurity. You know, it sometimes people sort of hide behind certain things, certain boundaries, because they feel a little insecure for some reason, which, you know, that is not an uncommon topic. We might talk about that another time. I did also want to mention that some people work, and I still see people doing this, which is I think really helpful, is they'll do a sliding scale or donation. I see, you know, sometimes people want to hire you for parties for donations. And I know people that do that. And again, I wouldn't do it at a party, but maybe if I was starting out, I might. But either of those never worked out well for me. The funniest story, now when Michael, largely Michael worked on Oceanfront Walk in Venice, known as Venice Boardwalk in the 90s when he came out here, he worked there pretty much every day. And you couldn't charge by law. You had to just take what people would give you. And I would work, I didn't work as much there because I was working at the Bodhi Tree at the time as a clerk. And so once in a while, I would work on the weekends or one day or two. And I remember one time this young woman sat down and her father was going to pay for the reading. I think I must have spent an hour and a half with her, which is something we did a lot in the beginning. We didn't charge according to time. That concept came up more as we worked for bookstores. And you really do need to figure that out. But we didn't do that. We would just charge a reading and go as long as we wanted. And so, you know, it was fun talking to her. I enjoyed it. It wasn't, a really draining situation. So at the end of the reading, even the father really thought it was a good reading. And he took out $2 and gave me $2. And the poor young woman was mortified. She was like, because she didn't have the money. And that was what he thought I was worth, even though I had done a very good job. So that was more a reflection how he values or not readings. And so the donation part never worked out great for me for some reason. Michael does all right with that. And I, you know, maybe that's just an energy thing. But what I have to have strong financial boundaries. That's what I have found. And it might work for you, though. Sliding scale might work for you. So sometimes you can try things on and see, you know, how it goes with you, because I know it does for some people.
I wanted to give a little bit of advice if there are any readers out there that are listening to us that are especially getting into it, and especially here in the LA area. And this will happen to you eventually as some dating show or something will come up and they'll say, look, you know, I wanted to have, you know, you included in this episode and you're gonna do a reading for this couple, but we can't afford to pay you, but it's gonna be great for your exposure, great for your visibility. My best advice is don't do it, you know, because that's never helped us. We've never actually gotten much out of those kind of things. We used to do that a little bit in the beginning. But then I ran into a friend who is a producer in the industry, and she said, they're lying to you. They can afford to pay you. But what it is that every episode they're given a budget. And whatever money they don't spend, the producer gets to pocket that as his bonus. So, of course, they don't want to pay you, because if he pays you, he's got less money to put in his pocket at the end of it. So, but she said, don't listen to that. They can absolutely afford to pay you a little bit for whatever you're doing if you're on the show. So, again, you know, so if you're a new reader in LA and somebody says, hey, you know, I want you to be on our show, but we can't pay you, and don't do it. It was my humble advice.
Yes, I had mixed results. I used to get a lot of those shows because I worked at the Bodhi Tree and nobody else would do them. So I did have two occasions where they paid me decently. One did not. And I think it might have been something like Blind Date. It was one of those dating shows. And that's when we found out, like, oh, no, they have a budget. They just don't want to pay you anything. Because I remember thinking, like, they have a pretty big show. And I think I just had to show them around the Bodhi Tree. I didn't even do a reading because I don't know why people wouldn't do it. I was like, I'll do it. I don't care. I'm here anyway. And so I got a lot of opportunities that way. But Michael's right, especially with Hollywood things. We also got this one where they wanted to prevent us from booking any other kind of filming for like a month. They had this huge contract for a month. We were going to be on this show and we weren't being paid even. We were like, no, we're not doing it. Once we saw that it was this weird contract, and I was like, wow. You better read those contracts. And sometimes they're not as hard as you think to read. You're like, okay, I get it.
Yeah, I think that was Fox, actually, as the network. And it was some, again, dating show or something they were on. And they gave us this contract to sign or this waiver. And definitely read the fine print, no doubt. Don't put your name on anything until you've had a chance to give it a good read. And not only would they own, you know, the rights to the episode, they would own the rights to our business. They would own the rights to anything we published for the foreseeable future. It, basically, they would own us, you know, for nothing. We weren't even getting paid for it. So needless to say, it wasn't something we signed. But definitely, you know, if they hand you a contract to sign, please read the fine print, because it's a, you want to know what you're signing away. And sometimes it's not just you're agreeing to be on their silly episode. It's a lot more than that. So there are some scoundrels out there, and they will take advantage of you if you let them. So be very careful with that.
Yeah, I totally agree. So, and then going into more of the deeper view of what value a reading has, because this is something that it's important for both people coming for readings and for people giving readings to understand that this notion, what is the value of a reading, is equally important. And supposedly, the financial side should reflect this in some way, which I think it can. So you think about, for me, I would have never become a reader if I had not really been benefited by some readings that literally improved my life significantly. And I can say a couple of them really changed my life for the better. And so for me, the value began because I went to readers at different points of my life. Some of it was the influence of my father, because he introduced me to the psychic Marion, and Steve Forrest, because he had gone to Steve Forrest, the astrologer, who's very well known now, but he was maybe locally well known at the time. He went there because of my brother's death, and he got a chart done on David. So he recommended, and so that's how I started going, because my dad was going. Then I went on my own, and I had friends too that would, we went to different readers. And I can say I was very fortunate. I really had good luck going to readers that helped me in some capacity, even if it's only like 25% of what they said. And the ones, now again, this was the 90s, and readings were not as popular. They were sort of, in the spiritual world, they were popular. But maybe Gene Dixon was a superstar, you know, before that, but you didn't have a lot of psychic superstars. And so most of the people I went to is part of their spiritual practice in some way. Marion Weinstein, I think that's her name. And so as a result, they were doing that as an extension of something they were immersed in. And so I found that they were all pretty good people. They were all trying to help me in their own way. And so there was, at least in my experience, not quite as much of the charlatan as there is now, because there's more power and money. Like any industry, when that happens, you have the, you know, the snake charmer coming in.
Yeah, and that brings us to another interesting point, too. We've had it happen not very often in the thousands upon thousands of readings we've done, but occasionally someone that will try and pull a fast one or take advantage of the reader. They'll get the reading and then they'll call up, you know, a few days later and said, I didn't really relate to that reading, or something didn't happen. I want my money back. So should you refund them their money, you know, if they've already gotten the reading? And to be honest, you know, a lot of times their misery is probably more associated with them than the reading. So, you know, they're looking for a job and the reading said that they would get work, but then they never bothered to fill out a job application. And that's actually happened with us and so forth. Now they're mad at you. So how do we handle that? And what we do is basically we say, fine, you know, we'll refund your money. You're not happy, we'll refund your money. No questions asked, absolutely, and we do that. But then again, the flip side of that means we're not going to ever do another reading for you as well, because we're not going to let ourselves be taken advantage of over and over either. So they kind of have to choose. And if they want their money back, we happily refund it. And they go on the list of people we're not going to read for anymore for whatever reason. And if they want to get another reading for us at some point in the future, because we've actually had that happen too, where the person's unhappy, they want their money back, and the next day they want to book another reading with you. And like, what's that? You know, what's that all about? So that's kind of the way that we handle that situation.
That's an excellent point. And it's true, we haven't had that happen a lot. I have had two long-term clients do that to me, which is it's fascinating to me, because one I'd read for years and years, but I think the person needed money. That's my guess. And they could have just asked me not to charge him for the reading. And having been such a long-term client, I probably would have. The other one was a little strange, and it's the same idea. Again, I'd read for this person many, many times and gotten very difficult things correct, but I don't get everything correct, and I never tell people I'm going to. And I got something a little off, and she wanted me to redo the reading. And I don't do that. I would do another reading, and then I just decided just to give the money back, and because I just thought it was odd. I'd been reading for her for years and years, and honestly, I've even some of the people I've gone back to that I've liked, I don't expect them to be always 100% on, even. And I think that's a very strange and unrealistic expectation, is particularly if you know their style of reading and how they see things. If they like, you know, some readers won't predict, and that's perfectly fine. So you want to, you know, so I don't know, other than what Michael says, we find it just easier to kind of stay out of that kind of stickiness. And because it doesn't happen very often, we just give the money back.
Yeah. And you don't want to get into a back and forth and, you know, have it get really nasty or something like that. It's just not worth it. But at the same time, like I said, don't let people take advantage of you either. And so there are boundaries. And to me, it's always, and you know, I think that most people have an innate sense of what's reasonable and what's fair in any situation. I think you just let yourself be governed by that, and I think you'll be fine. But there is value in getting a reading too. I mean, you know, I've seen people take information in a reading and apply it in some positive way and completely change their lives for the better. And that reading was a turning point for them. So what's that worth to you? To them, it would have been priceless, you know, because it really did help them to kind of put themselves on a better path in life, that, you know, that there's just, you know, you can't measure the value in something like that for the most part. We've done readings that have literally saved lives, you know, and I think we've told that story on previous episodes. But to me, again, those things have an immense value in them. And so, again, it's going to be, you know, what it's worth to you in that sense. But I think, again, when you're dealing with a reader who's the legit thing, that's ethical, that's studied, that really knows what they're doing, yes, don't expect perfection. And none of us are perfect. None of us will ever 100% get everything exactly right. And I always tell people, keep in mind that readings are static and life is dynamic, which means that the reading is basically saying this is what should happen if things continue as they're going now, but there are no guarantees that that will happen. There's always those little chaotic elements, or a person may suddenly decide to do something differently. So basically, it's an educated, you know, opinion in that sense. I don't think that's a guess, because to me, again, we're doing a lot of calculation. We're looking at a lot of different things in a reading. We're kind of putting it all together. We're reaching a very educated guess as to what we think is going to happen next and so forth. And many, many, many times you're right, you know, which is amazing. And there are definitely times where there's things that we couldn't have influenced that happened. To me, that just blows my mind, and that's happened a lot too. So for me, that there is that value in that. But I think the value is also, it's a co-created thing, and part of the value is what you bring to the reading. Are you going to be open to the information? Are you going to do something with it? Are you going to take it and apply that to your life in some way? And even if the reading isn't 100% accurate, can you gain something out of that that is going to be incredibly beneficial? And I think the vast majority of the people we've read for, and we have people we've read for, you know, going back 25 years that still get readings with us. So clearly, if they didn't find value in it, they would have given up on us an awful long time ago. And we've read for them, you know, several times a year, as I said, for the last 25 years, and we still read for some of the same people. So it's clear that they do find value in what we do. And I think that you have to just understand the whole mechanics of the process and what readings are all about.
I totally agree. And one of the things that I'll give an example of me getting something from a reading and the value it was, because I still do that myself. And so I did a reading for this businessman when I was at the Bodhi Tree. And oftentimes people offer me free readings and for a variety of reasons, and I never take it, honestly. And he was a really nice man. And he just says, look, I enjoyed my reading so much. Just to thank you, I want to just give you a little reading because I just do this for my friends. So he wasn't trying to butter me up and then something told me to accept the offer. And honestly, I think that's there was one other person I accepted an offer from, and it was very helpful. And he only read these three cards and he made this very brief statement. And it was so relevant and so helpful that I literally thought about it off and on for a year to keep me focused on my track. And so it wasn't, in his case, he did a different kind of a reading. It was more like an advice, you know, in the moment kind of thing. But it was so dead on in ways I wasn't expecting. And it was so helpful to sort of remind myself of what that reading had told me. So if you go to readers yourself and you have a deep opinion, a deep value that the oracle is here to help us, however you like to see the oracle, I have found it to really be a very powerful way to shape your life in a very positive and meaningful way.
Yeah, Kristen and I have talked about doing something similar to that on TikTok. And, you know, people keep pushing us, you got to do TikTok. And we're old, we don't understand this stuff, but apparently it's something now that we have to do. So we've talked about it. And I don't want to do general readings where it's the same three cards for the whole planet. And I've never been a big believer in that. So, and I don't want to be a hypocrite, and I don't like doing something I don't believe in. So it's just not going to happen, that part of it. So what I've decided to do, and we're going to look at it, and maybe hopefully we'll launch it over the summer, is the idea of taking one tarot card every week, but not presenting it as a predictive reading thing, but more as a contemplation. This is the teaching and lesson of the card. How can you apply that to your own life in some beneficial way? So we'll see it more as a contemplation or a meditation type of thing. And I think that will be really a lot of fun. So we're kind of looking forward to that. So hopefully you guys will push us a little bit to get that started, and we'll try and launch that over the summer as well.
I totally think we ought to, and Michael's going to be the one doing that, so I will certainly be helping him and supporting him to do that, because just the idea, one of the values of any kind of system is if you think about it and contemplate it in a way, it does help you to look at life in certain ways. And so that's one thing I've always liked about astrology, numerology, and tarot, is it can help me see a different perspective. I think the reason tarot sort of worn out for me is because of the visual aspect of it. And personally, I like the idea that it comes out of the playing card world, that sense of play, that humor that is in the tarot. And one of the things I think that's really valuable for all of us, and maybe this is more pronounced with any kind of card reading, is that you have, let's say it's just one person coming for a reading and they sit down and you pull the cards together and then the cards are facing both of you. And that moment of looking at the cards and you're taking time to look at the story of your life. And how valuable is that? That's really wonderfully valuable. You can see that alone. Because things are so busy now that you just take that even 15 minutes to stop and look at your life. And I love it, that idea of the cards being that sort of third party that brings this co-created relationship together. And so that's the beauty, I think, particularly of card readings.
Coming back again to the idea of people that charge an outrageous amount of money for a reading, and if you're thinking about it, you know, my humble advice is you don't need it. In fact, you don't need me and Krista. You know, we're more than happy to work with you, and we believe that we do some really cool stuff, and that we take it very seriously, and that we've helped a lot of people, and we're more than happy to work with you. But I sincerely believe that you're going to get your message one way or the other through the universe. If not through us, then through somebody else, you know, or some other thing or some sign if you're watching for it. And so I remember Krista had to confront someone over something that had wronged her in one way or another, and we were going there, and she was a little anxious about it, and one of her totems is moose, and we're driving down Venice Boulevard, and the Rocky and Bullwinkle movie was coming out, and there was a huge, huge billboard that said, "Evil meets its moose," and I said, "See, you'll be fine. The universe just told you you're going to be okay." So she didn't need a reader for that, you know. The universe was more than happy to give her a billboard to tell her what she needed to know. So trust that part of things, too, in life, and again, you're going to get your messages one way or another, whether through us or whether through some other means, so I don't think you really need to spend, you know, $10,000 for a 20-minute reading with some famous psychic, just so, because that's the only way the message can come to you. I really, truly don't believe that. I think that the universe is always trying to communicate with us in one way or another, and I think Krista and I are just another conduit for that, and we definitely, you know, work hard to protect our craft, and we're very proud of what we do, but we don't believe that we're irreplaceable, and that if you don't want to get a reading with us, I think you're still going to get your information if you're open to it from some other source.
I think that's a really excellent point. I love, of course, that idea. I'll never forget that was amazing. I would have missed that, by the way. Michael's the one that saw the bulletin board because I was too much like panicking, right? And it was so humorous. But that idea that the universe is going to give you the messages however it comes, and it's really fun and playful. And I totally agree with Michael. You can go through your whole life, have a beautiful, successful life without any kind of reading. So to me, it all, again, comes down to values. You know, I have never paid to go to a football game. It's not one of my values. And yet there are many people that love football and they'll go pay for it and they love it and they look forward to it. It has some meaning and value to them. And so you want to never feel like, oh, you know, my friends get these readings, but I don't really want to. No, then don't. You know, it's not your style. It's everyone has different ways in which they live their life. So that, I think, is part of deciding the value of a reading.
Yeah, another point that you're sort of touching on a little bit with this, which I think is important for people too, is to not get coerced into a reading. And we definitely have those readers out there that have something to tell you. Please come talk to me because I need you to get this information. And to me, again, that's a huge red flag. So you should never let someone talk you into a reading. The best reading is going to come when you feel drawn to someone, when you feel like, I want to connect with this person in some way. But it should be something that, again, Spirit is moving you in some way to want to initiate. And that's why Chris and I really, you know, don't advertise a whole lot. I mean, all of our business has pretty much been word of mouth. We really have done very little promotion. And one thing I always tell my clients is that now that you're a client, you know, I'm more than happy to answer the phone or text message anytime you call or reach out, but I'm not going to reach out to you because I'm always concerned that as the reader, if I reach out just to say, hey, how's it going? Just because I haven't heard from this person in a while, it's more of just a friendly gesture, that in their mind, they'll say, oh, he's reaching out to me. I guess maybe I need a reading. And I don't want it to come from me. I want it to come from them. So I let them contact me, and I'm always happy to chat with them, even if they just want to chat about hockey or the weather or whatever. But I make sure that because they're a client that they initiated, I'm not going to in any way plan a suggestion that they need a reading.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And we have lived our life largely like that. I would say that's why it's been a little awkward for me to figure out how to work social media. But I don't private message people, and I'm really a strong believer in not doing that for so many reasons. I remember at the Bodhi Tree, there used to be some of those people that would walk by where we did the readings trying to steal our business, and they would look at people's faces and say things, because they did that to me once, you know, even though it was a pleasant thing they said, I forget. I remember the fellow went on and said, oh, and also, by the way, you know, you have a spirit in your house. It's haunted. You're going to need my help. I said, oh, I know. Thank you. I really like the spirit. I remember that. And I was just kind of messing with him, you know. But those are the ones that kind of reach out and say, hey, I see luck in your forehead, or I see a ghost in your house and I can help you. And I would totally stay away from people like that, unless you want to mess with them. Then that's a whole nother ball game. Because one of the things we discovered, shockingly, is how some of those, and not all of those kinds of readers, have stolen so much money from people. And I would say it's stealing, honestly, because we're talking thousands and thousands of dollars at once, not over like 10 years or something. And they have manipulated people and are really frauds and con people. And you definitely want to stay away from that kind of a person. And you can tell because they are the ones that reach out to you.
Yeah, for sure. And just watch out for that a little bit, too. Anyone who promises you that they can fix your problems for you doesn't work that way. I mean, a reading for us is about opening a door to you, gaining an understanding, but you got to do something to fix your own life. No reader can do that for you. So when they promise you, and of course, if they get into you, have a dark cloud following you around and you're always going to suffer unless you let me help you, and it'll only cost you thousands upon thousands of dollars. And keep in mind, it usually starts with just a few dollars and then it grows from there, and they need to add a little bit more. And next thing you know, they can't help you and the spell isn't going to work unless you open a charge account at Tiffany's for me or something. So watch out for those people. And to me, again, when we look at, you know, charging for readings, we do that. I don't do magic for people, especially I'd rather they do their own. And I usually help them to, you know, have some understanding of how to approach a ritual or magic so that they can do it for themselves. And I'll educate them. But we don't charge for that. If it's something, again, that is getting into that area of fixing your problem for you, you got to fix it yourself. I'll be happy to give you some suggestions, but it's up to you to do the work. And I'm not going to ever charge money for that.
Yeah, that's sort of one of the areas I draw the line too, is I don't normally do any magic for people. Once in a while, I will include them in my spell. Like I'll ask them, I'm doing this spell. Because I know that they're struggling. These are usually my friends or family. And I agree with Michael. I feel really like it's more empowering for people. So I've often told people what I think could help them if they say, hey, I have this magical problem. In fact, recently, somebody was asking me about magic, and I just turned them on some really good books and that I use, and sort of some ideas about magic. And I just do that for free because I like to blab about the things I read anyway. So it gives me the opportunity to say, hey, I just love that book, you know? And so I agree with Michael too. It's more empowering when with magical things, generally speaking, if you do your own. However, there can be exceptions, and I have paid for magic, but it was very inexpensive.
Yeah, I mean, something that's a little charm bag for a couple dollars. I mean, that's not really what I'm talking about, but somebody who wants an outrageous amount of money to, you know, reunite you with a loved one or to, you know, some other thing, stay away. You know, that those are not ethical people typically, and they won't do that. Most good readers are not going to go down that path, and we certainly don't. But again, you know, a lot of it comes down to common sense. And I think if you guys apply a little common sense, you'll find great readers that will work with you that are reasonable and incredibly helpful. And you'll be able to avoid people that you probably don't want to be interacting with.
One of the things that I feel pretty comfortable with doing, too, in terms of value is how many readings do I let people get at a time with me? I had one person that wanted to see me like two or three times a week for like an hour. And first of all, what in the world would I say? And I get that people use us a little bit for therapy, but I assure you, I do not tell people I'm a therapist. But, you know, I'm a good listener, and I feel like it's part of the whole soothsaying kind of energy, is that we help people to get calm and so that they can think better. And I said, absolutely not. And I know some people would probably do that. And I told her, I said, what am I going to tell you? I said, no, this is the amount I'm comfortable with. And I will even change it sometimes. I have turned down quite a bit of readings where I felt people were not using the information in a way that was helping them and definitely not helping me. I was too tired and drained. And so you can also kind of look and see how it's affecting you. And if you just feel like you're not looking forward to the reading, and then you need a, you know, and you just accept that that's your limit. It's okay to say, I don't read as frequently as some people read. And you have to make those decisions too, for a variety of reasons. It's going to be something you do individually.
And again, sort of reaching out and talking to any readers that might be listening too. Ultimately, I think you're responsible. So, you know, make sure that the process is healthy. And if the person wants you to go beyond those limits that you think are healthy, you don't have to read for that person. I do think if you refuse to read for a person, let them know why you refuse. Don't let them jump to the conclusion you saw that they're going to die and you just don't want to tell them or something. Just explain to them, you know, I don't really want to read for you right now because you just had a reading and it's too soon. And I'd rather you let things unfold a little bit more before we have another look at things or whatever it may be. But give them a good explanation. Don't just leave them hanging and I'm not going to work with you and walk away. And don't feel like you ever have to be compelled to work with somebody you really don't want to work with. That again is, you're not here to be a martyr. And I remember we started the Bodhi Tree, and I think we've told this story before too, that one of the psychics when we were starting the program there brought in this article from some magazine, and it was, the gist of it was that this reader had found out that one of their clients was a pedophile and they didn't want to work with them anymore because they were so offended by this person that they felt they couldn't be objective. And the writer of the article was chastising them for not being quote-unquote professional enough to set aside their own feelings to work with this person. And I thought, you know, I said, you know, that's BS. I said, the person did exactly the right thing. They basically said, look, I'm so offended by you that I'm honestly can't be objective anymore. And because I can't be objective anymore, I'm not the right person for you to be working with. And I thought that is exactly the right thing to do, to explain to them why that is and let them find somebody who maybe can work with them if that's what they want to do. But I don't think you should ever feel compelled to have to do a reading for someone. And I think you, as a reader, want to understand that it's up to you to set those healthy boundaries, to make sure that the process is healthy for your client, and that you may have to put the brakes on them every once in a while or something like that. But I think, you know, again, explain it when you do, but realize this is your responsibility. You're the one that's ultimately in charge of the process. You're the doctor, if you will, or the therapist or whatever it may be. So you've got to take those ethical responsibilities seriously if you're going to be a reader.
I totally agree. And Michael and I both have had to do that sometimes, not frequently again. And I know one thing sometimes you can say if it's just a very first time person and you can tell after a while, you can kind of tell right away that you're not the right person. You say, oh, we're not a good fit. Now, if it's someone you're working with for a while, then like in my case with the person that wanted to see me so often, I explained to them, you know, pretty much why and in a nice way, and they accepted it. It was fine. You know, it didn't actually change our relationship in the long run, but I just knew that it would affect me negatively and I wouldn't be fully there for her. But I agree with Michael that those are the boundaries, the things that you have to decide. I had one other funny story about the idea of, is tarot valuable for people in society at all? And this is one of a really humorous story. I was reading for one of my clients regularly, and she went to a psychologist. I think it was either a psychologist or psychiatrist on a regular basis, and happened to mention to this person that she was getting readings. And they were really a little disturbed because they had heard really negative things about readers and readings. And so without me knowing it, they booked a reading with me, got the reading, and basically reported back to our mutual client that it's all right, I'm helping her. And whatever, however I approached the reading, it wasn't what this person expected. And then, you know, was a very open-minded kind of person because they wanted to see, okay, I'm being very judgmental, so let me just get a reading and see what this person that my client is talking about, my patient's talking about. And then felt fine about being able to say, hey, it's okay, I can see why you benefit from this person. I've had this happen with a couple of therapists. Even another one said, hey, to her patient, it's time that you go see Krista now. So evidently therapists like us.
Yeah, it's really funny that way. And we do read for a lot of therapists. And therapists and exotic dancers, I guess they have something in common. We read a lot for both. But, you know, again, and just to any of you listening to the broadcast, if you guys, or the show after it airs, if you guys are considering getting a reading, especially if you've never had one before, if you're working with a reader and you have concerns about whether they're being ethical or not, just want a little advice on the reading process and how it works and so forth, please reach out to us, send us an email or something. We're always more than happy to share a little bit of advice. And so don't feel like you can't reach out to us. And we're not going to charge you for that. We charge for our services when we do a reading for people, but we're more than happy to help and guide a little bit. And we value what we do. We've been doing it for over 25 years now and countless hours, and we care deeply about it, but we want it to be a healthy process for you. And we feel if we can steer you guys in the right direction a little bit, we're always more than happy to do that. So if you are interested in getting a reading from someone, even if it's not us, you just want some advice on how to find a good reader, what to look for, what to stay away from, then please, by all means, as I said, fire us off an email or something, you know, and we're more than happy to help and respond.
I totally agree. And we do that. I do that especially when people are looking for other types of readings like astrologers or numerologists. And I like to normally have people I can recommend fully because I see them as good at what they do, but also ethical. So to me, it has to be both good and ethical, and I will recommend them. Or even how, like Michael said, how do you go about finding, you know, someone that is, because it's when I looked, especially if you go through, by the way, there are some good psychics on these networks, because one of my clients said that they did find a couple of people. You just have to, I guess, the same thing. You probably have to sort through and take a look at the reviews and stuff. So I certainly don't think that there's anything wrong with going to a psychic network if you want to, but there's a lot of people on there. So how would I pick the person? A lot of times you can look at people's websites and things like that, but it's a little more complicated than that, I think, in terms of if you're not quite sure and you've never done it. And certainly referrals from friends are often very helpful because they'll tell you all the ins and outs. I like this person for this reason and that reason. And that's still a very powerful way to find a decent reader.
It's funny coming back to the Psyche Network thing again. I don't know. I'm sure Krista remembers this. But I think it was California Psychics. I hope we don't get sued by them for mentioning them, but you know, facts are facts. And we were debating about, you know, is this a road that we want to go down as readers to maybe try and make a little extra money or something? And so we did look into it. We did apply for the network at one point. And part of it was they had you do a practice or a test reading or something for one of their people to see, I guess, if you're legit or not or good or not or whatever. And for whatever reason, Krista passed and got accepted and I got rejected by them. So they didn't offer me a job. And as I said, once we saw the contract and they wanted rights to all our intellectual property and everything else, we obviously didn't go down that path, you know, for a number of reasons. So then fast forward a few years later, and I'm doing readings at a bookstore here at the Mystic Journey in Venice Beach. And unbeknownst to me, one of the women I read for is one of the to-dos with this network, some person that is part of their executive or whatever they are. And so I did a reading for her, never came up in the topic that was part of it. And so go on Yelp and here's this incredible review about how it was one of the most amazing readers she ever had. And it really was fantastic and so forth. It was this glowing review from somebody who basically rejected me for being no good. So I thought that was kind of the universe getting in the last laugh. And so I smiled and went about my business, but I thought that was a wonderful message for me that day.
Well, and also it was the network like 13 years ago. So who knows what they're like now? It could be quite different. So I just know that was my experience in terms of the amount of money they wanted. And I'm almost 100% sure it was at least a similar name to that, because there weren't a lot of networks now. But like I said, it could have changed a lot by now. But as readers, that is, you know, and we're getting close to the end of the show now, but as readers, one of the things you'll have to decide if you want to work for others is how much you're willing to give of your cut. And that is, again, a very individual decision, because it might be worthwhile for you based on whatever your life is. Like if you live somewhere, for instance, where you don't need a lot of income, then that might still be good for you. So to me, that's another one of those things that you as a reader will have to decide on your own, like how much you're worth. It's worth to give to others to represent you in some level or to work at their store.
Yeah, and then a quick shout out again to people that are getting into the reading business or want to be a professional reader and you're deciding what to charge. And this is, again, for parties and special events and so forth. One of the pieces of advice I would give you, and it's the same as anybody in the entertainment field does, is front load your charge. So the first hour for us is $300. It's $150 for every hour after that. And the reason for that is that a 1 hour event is still going to take up your whole night by the time you travel and go there and do everything else. So you want to kind of make sure that the majority of your charge is kind of that first hour. And then you can sort of, you know, make it easy on them for every extra hour that they want to book you. That sort of becomes the gravy. Because as I said, a 1 hour event is going to take up my whole night anyway. And if I'm going to do it for just 1 hour, by the time I have to get in my car, burn gas, drive there, burn gas coming back, everything else, it needs to be worth my while. So for me, again, you know, I think the best strategy is always to front load your charge a little bit into the first hour and then, you know, again, spread it out over the next two or three. So hopefully they'll hire you for 3 or 4 hours or whatever it'll be. But as I said, those short events, 1-2 hours, you want to make sure that it's worth your while. And that's the easiest way to do it.
Yes, that's really good advice. And I also always Google where the place is now, because I didn't do that one time. And it was like a 2.5 hour drive. And it was when, again, I was new to LA and I was like, oh my God. And it was a really great party. It was so much fun, but I really did not put in any extra money for the commute. And luckily at the time, gas was not as high as it is now.
Anyway, I think we're at the end of our hour. So I'm glad you guys are interested in what we're doing. And if you have any questions, like I said, get a hold of us and we'll be happy to chat with you. So I'll kick it back to you to close, Krista. So take it away again, Krista.
Thank you all for listening in. And again, if you have any questions or even want to share any stories with us, you can always reach us on our email. And you can also look for readings at our site, mysticraven.net, and it has a little more information in general there about us too. So I hope you have a great week and you join us next time as we continue to explore the esoteric and the obscure together.